from WNYC New York Public Radio. This is the podcast of The Leonard Lopate Show. This is just one segment of the program. You can hear all Leonard's interviews on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
I'm Leonard Lopate, and on my show today, we'll start off with a look at how smells affect our appreciation of food. Have you ever wondered what it is about the aroma of freshly popped popcorn that's so enticing, and why foodies are willing to spend lots of money on musty-smelling fungi like truffles, or say yummy when they see a slab of stinky blue cheese? Well, with that in mind, we have decided to conduct some experiments with taste and smells, and joining me now is Ruth Reichel, editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine, for the latest in her monthly visits to the show. Also here are Danielle Ballou, chef-owner of Danielle Café Ballou and DB Bistro Moderne, and Dr. Marsha Levin-Pelsha, who is an associate member of the Monelli Chemical Senses Center, a scientific institute devoted to taste and smell research. It is located in Philadelphia, and I'm very pleased to welcome you all to the show. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Dr. Pelsha, you're all on the boards of the American Institute of Wine and Food and Les Dames d'Escoffier.
Right.
So it's not just smell for you. Do you work a lot with chefs?
Yes, I do. I'm probably the most cuisine-oriented of the scientists at Monell.
And you study food cravings as well
yes.
And loss of smell.
Yes, yes. Lots of fun to study food cravings. Loss of the sense of smell is a little less fun and more sad.
And we'll get to that later, what happens when that happens. So what goes on in the nose when you're actively smelling something?
When you're actively smelling something from the outside, we call that the orthonasal pathway, and you sniff, little currents of air go up to the olfactory receptors, which are at the very top of the nasal cavity. They're activated and they send electrical signals straight up into the base of the brain.
And it's important that we already know what certain smells mean. Then what are we smelling something? Are we smelling something and then tying it in with our memory of that thing?
Well, the sense of smell is very closely linked with emotion and memory. It's a sensory system that differs from all of the others in that it goes directly to that old reptilian emotional part of the brain and is fairly poorly connected to the cortex, the newer part of the brain.
So when a green apple actually helps reduce a migraine or make a claustrophobic feel more comfortable in a room, is that because of something in the smell of that green apple?
It doesn't have anything to do with the physical characteristics of the odor. It has more to do with the memories associated with that aroma.
Because it's a Granny Smith? That
bad times.
But so in other words, that's a psychological response, not really a physical response. The same true with lavender, which reduces anxiety, I gather?
That's what we think. With the sense of taste and something like sweet taste, there's an inborn preference for that. But with odors, we think that responses are primarily learned.
I see that you've brought some squeeze bottles with you and a lot of other stuff here as well.
Right.
What are we going to smell?
Well, I can't tell you. It's your job to guess. So,
well, we have two people here who probably have as sophisticated palates as any people I know. Do you assume that they will be more adept at this sort of thing than I, an amateur, would be? Or am I putting them on the spot here?
Practice does make people a little bit better at identifying odorants, but it is a difficult task for anybody because, as I said before, the sense of smell is not very directly connected to the part of the brain that talks. So it's very difficult to name odors.
Well, what I loved was you told me earlier that cooks tend to do better at this than other people.
Right. But that's
Ruth is a very good cook, so we'll see.
But Danielle, when perfumers.
When you're cooking, I assume, because you're not tasting everything, that the way something looks, the change in the color, and the way it smells,
of course,
is a key to you. You know when to take it off the fire because of things other than tasting it.
Of course, by looking at it, but also by sensing the smell and the taste as well. I think, you know, we have very sophisticated kitchen where the air exhaust is very good as well. So that's the frustration sometimes, because we wish the whole kitchen could smell good, but it's only partial over the pot. But it's very key often to smell, especially on preparation where there is a certain sweating or there's an evaporation of smell.
Where it intensifies in the process.
Yes, we get intensified with the roasting of it or the toasting of it. And
well, we definitely, when we go into a kitchen where something is being roasted or baked, we have this wonderfully positive response. And that's you're saying that's because of an emotional thing. We tie it in with positive experiences in the past?
Yes, they can be positive emotional experiences, but also just positive eating experiences.
But what would happen if I went into a kitchen in a foreign country where they were cooking something I'd never eaten before? Would I have to eat it first before I knew whether I'd have a positive response the next time I smelled it?
You might. All other things being equal, people prefer familiar odors and familiar foods to unfamiliar ones. Now, everyone differs in the degree to which they prefer familiar foods. Some people travel in order to eat new things, and some people travel with crackers and peanut butter in their suitcases. So
they never have to eat a new thing.
Right.
So are you going to pass around some of these odors? Have you already given them to Ruth and Danielle?
Is there a method here? Are we supposed to do something with these?
We're passing around.
We got a bunch of toy here.
Oh, yeah. Wait. No, you have to leave the jelly beans for later.
Oh, okay.
They're, of course, gourmet jelly beans.
Uh-huh. I like that.
But we're passing around plastic squeeze bottles that look like the sort of bottle you'd have shampoo in.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But they're covered up. So just squeeze and sniff, and don't yell out the answer if you know. I'm being mean here because I'm starting with a non-food odor.
Uh-huh.
Food aromas ought to be easier for these two, but
are they easier in general, or are there certain things that will always fool us?
Well, familiar odors are easier than unfamiliar odors.
I'm reaching for it.
It's non-food.
That's non-food.
God, it just smells familiar.
This one is easy.
Is it
that one?
This one's easy.
That's a familiarity. Mm-hmm. Demonstration right mm-hmm. there.
Of course. But the other
it's
one
is. It's not a fine ingredient.
The first order was part of our environment in life? Or
yes.
And often the home?
It can be, or the classroom. If you know children, you yes. might be better at that.
Mm-hmm.
Any guesses?
Well, the first one smelled to me like the inside of a rubber beach ball.
Well, actually, that was a Crayola crayon. Mm. And
Crayola?
What's interesting...
Did you grow up using Crayolas in France?
Yeah, a little bit.
Because they do have a special smell. And as I understand it, forgive me for interrupting you, Dr. Pelchard, when the Chinese started producing crayons that didn't have that smell, they discovered that many people resisted buying them and they had to actually add the odor because people associated them with crayons.
That's true.
And that's rubber, the smell
it's
of it?
It's wax.
Wax, uh-huh.
And children identify that much more quickly than adults do.
Now that's
a tough one.
No, but now that you've said it, it's absolutely, it's yeah. right there.
And if you sample it again, it'll smell just like crayons.
No, yeah. even in yeah. my mind now, it right. smells yeah, just like crayons.
Now, the second one was very familiar.
That is definitely crayons. Yeah,
and it's old. It's been in there.
It's a Hershey chocolate bar.
It is a Hershey chocolate bar. And
Now you distinguished a Hershey as opposed to a Nestle or
chocolate.
it just had that really distinctive Hershey chocolate bar smell to me.
Mm-hmm.
Something I probably haven't eaten, I would venture, in 20 years, but it's right. that mm-hmm. strong.
Well, odor memory in some ways is not good. You know, it's hard for people to name odorants, but it's very long-lasting. Once you've smelled something, you know it's familiar forever. You know, when you smell it again, there's very little forgetting.
What I'm most impressed with often in this particular field is the sommelier and the wine connoisseur, because they would have tasted a wine from, you know, 1921, and an expert will be able to. I mean, I had session with great sommelier where I opened blind bottles, and they go back to the place, they go back to the time, they go back to the vintage, and boom, hit it right on. And that's memory of taste, I think. I mean, memory of smell a lot.
It's taste. Amazing to watch yeah. someone mm-hmm. do that. I mean, with wines yeah. that are 70 years old.
So is that because they have special abilities, or is that something that we all can learn? I've heard that women generally have more sensitive senses of smell than men do.
Women do, on average, have more sensitive senses of smell, but it is a learning process. And you see this in chefs, vintners, perfumers, and so on.
Is that the reason that so many perfumes have the smells of flowers, because we associate them with positive things? And why do we associate flowers with particularly positive things?
I suppose it's because they're beautiful, but on the other hand, once perfumers started using flowers to make perfume, that became the expectation. And in fact, now a lot of food aromas are appearing in perfume: vanilla, watermelon, cucumber.
But even beyond that, I've seen a whole new line. I just saw that this week, of creme brulee perfume and lemon tart hand cream. I mean, it's beyond just fruits and spices into actual cooked foods.
But I made some tests also of candles, you know, like creme brulee candles and tiramisu candles. Smell like, well, you have the cocoa and the
I like the idea of a candle having that smell. I'm not sure that I want to nestle up to somebody and smell creme brulee on the nape of her neck.
Buddy Grimm, yeah.
Well, that's a whole other matter. Are there certain odors, for example, Ruth, that really... food odors that really get to you? Would it be fresh baked bread or something?
Oh, there's nothing like the smell of fresh baked bread. Butter and sugar together are just a stunningly delicious odor to me. Vanilla in almost anything smells wonderful. And roasting beef. Mm. Oh, roasting beef smells so good.
That was what I was going to mention.
Danielle, you grew up in a farm. So absolutely. Are there odors that go back to that?
Very much, because, you know, we were cooking every day, heavily, with everything from the farm. And by walking home, I knew what we were eating, for sure.
Really? Why were you walking home?
First, because we didn't have any exhaust in the kitchen. So the kitchen was definitely, you had to open the window. And just being around the smell, I have a lot of memory of wonderful meal. And also the pleasure of the repeated smell, you know, when, oh, again, we're having roasted potato with, or we're having, the interesting thing is that often the smell during the week, Monday was always smelling similar, always, and Fridays was always smelling the same, and Sunday there was always a baked pie and all that. So that was the added smell.
I just thought of another amazing smell: chicken soup.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing smells like chicken soup in a house.
We have to take a little break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the things that some people love and some people don't love. Continue these various taste tests. Oh, a taste test? I'm saying taste. It's actually smell tests, but smell and taste, they are so connected. Our guests are Dr. Marsha Levin-Pelsha, who's an associate member of the Minnelli Chemical Senses Center, a scientific institute that's devoted to taste and smell research in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Also here are Daniel Ballou, the chef owner of some of New York's most celebrated restaurants, Danielle, Café Ballou, and DB Bistro Moderne, and Ruth Reichel, who is the editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine. Stay with us. We're back talking about smells as they relate to food with Ruth Reichel, editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine, Chef Danielle Boulou, and also Dr. Marcia Levin-Pelsha, who's an associate member of the Minnelli Chemical Senses Center in Philadelphia. And we have just done a few that were, well, one stumped us, the other one didn't. What are some of the other things you have for us, Dr. Pelsha?
Well, right now I have what is probably our best demonstration. And to understand this demonstration, you have to know that the nose and the mouth are connected. Usually I bring an anatomical drawing, but I didn't think that would go over very well on radio. If you ask a group of children what happens if somebody makes you laugh while you're drinking milk, they tell you immediately it comes out your nose. So in a sense, everyone knows that the nose and the mouth are connected. What we have here are three distinctively flavored jelly bellies. We have licorice, coffee or root beer, and banana. And I will demonstrate. This is a delicate scientific experiment. I'm going to put the nose clips on.
How fun is to talk while you have the...
Right.
We're all going to talk.
So we're all wearing...
We're all punching our nose.
Right, our souvenir nose clips. Now, everybody, make sure your nose is really closed.
Now, if you're just tuning in, this is an experiment.
Okay.
This is not...
You don't want to cheat.
This is not what your public radio normally sounds like.
Right.
It's very efficient.
Right, much more mellow voices. Okay, so close your eyes, mix up the jelly bellies. Oh. Don't look at which one you've taken.
One thing I can tell you already, I don't like banana.
So. Well, that's okay. You're doing it for science. So begin to chew with the nose clips on. Before you swallow, take the nose clips off and see whether it becomes any more obvious.
Oh, yeah.
Which flavor you have in your mouth.
Absolutely. It went from, I'm not sure, to coffee.
Oh, my God. Amazing.
It went from nothing to banana.
I went from absolutely nothing to the minute it came off.
Yeah.
It was pure, devastatingly strong banana.
Oh, you both had the bananas. Okay.
Oh, my God.
I had the coffee, but it was surprisingly powerful.
Yes.
What is the name of the tool we put in on our nose here?
Just a nose clip.
Nose clip, huh?
You can do this
in the restaurant, and then all the food will taste the same.
Well, you know, you can do that by cloching, too.
I mean, the thing that's amazing is you can talk about this. I mean, I knew this was true. You can talk about it till the cows come home. But until you experience this, you have no sense of how really powerful it is.
So this is a great demonstration to do at home. The reason
But you know what? I hate to say this. I just tried the banana. I tasted the banana with the nose clip. Did that mean I didn't put the nose clip on well?
Yeah, well, perhaps. You can. There are some slight taste differences between the flavors, but generally speaking, the jelly beans are sweet in terms of taste per se. But there are limited number of taste qualities, sweet, sour, bitter, salty, maybe umami is the fifth new one.
Mm-hmm.
What gives us the tremendous variety in food flavor distinguishes peach from mango, beef from lamb, basmati rice from the cheap supermarket kind, is the aroma component, and we can experience thousands and thousands of different odors, and so that is the source of a great deal of the variety and flavor that we experience.
The most dramatic for me was the licorice, which was barely discernible, and then I took the nose clip off, and suddenly I felt it was exploding in my nose.
But I just tried to start the licorice, then close my nose after, and it shut off totally.
Really?
The mm-hmm. flavor. And then you open back, and boom, it's coming back.
Right. I felt like I could feel the licorice. I knew it was licorice from some kind of volatile...
Licorice has glyceric mm-hmm. acid mm-hmm. in it, which is a sweetener that has a different quality of sweet taste from sucrose. So there is something that you can get from licorice without
I knew
your nose
it was
open.
Licorice when I couldn't taste it. I knew that it was the licorice one, even though it had no licorice flavor.
But the point is that the sense of smell adds so much more.
I mentioned earlier that there are some smells that some people love and some people don't love. Garlic is one of them. In fact, and strong mushroom smells, some people find them musty, absolutely. Other people find them heavenly. Cheeses also. Why is that? Is that just a matter of how we have been brought up?
Sometimes people love these smells in the mouth, so they love the retronasal experience mm-hmm. of that smell. That is the odor getting up to the receptors by the back way, but they don't like the smell on their hands or their upholstery or their clothing. And that's one of the great mysteries. Is there a difference between retronasal olfaction and orthonasal?
So when I'm perfectly happy with the smell of garlic, but if somebody is talking close to me and has garlic on the breath, it's a rather unpleasant experience.
Yeah, I feel the same way about blue cheese on the hands. I love blue cheese, but the smell of it on my hands is to me, repulsive.
Yeah.
Now, how much of this is also determined by where we taste something? There's a wine glass maker, Riedel, who does this taste test. I don't know if you've ever done that, Danielle.
Absolutely.
And they have different shaped glasses that they say deliver the wine to different parts of your mouth. And so... some glasses make a wine taste great. Some of them make them taste less great.
That's not true, though. We ran a scientific piece last summer that says that all of that is just scientific nonsense.
And I was one of the scientists quoted in that.
But I will say that the glass looked good.
They're so beautiful the wine glasses. Look, I own some.
It makes the wine look and smell good.
I do, too. Yeah.
And breakage is murderous for you, isn't it? And one of those breaks.
No, but I think in the world of glassware, I think it's a very competitive world, and everyone has to have a very professional understanding of what they are looking for when they make those glass. And I think Riedel definitely has attached himself to be the pro at differentiating shape for certain wine. I think.
So, but everybody has different glasses for different wines, so they must assume that something has to be delivered to your mouth differently. Are the taste buds the same no matter where something hits our mouths?
Probably one of the biggest misconceptions about taste and smell is the tongue map, the idea that the tip of the tongue senses sweet and the back senses bitter and so on. It turns out that any part of the tongue that contains taste receptors is sensitive to all of the basic tastes. So we would rather that people didn't talk about the tongue map anymore. It's the result of a mistranslation of a German text. We think that the jelly bean demonstration tells people something a lot more fundamental about mm-hmm. flavor than the tongue map.
But when you're preparing something at the restaurant, Danielle, working on a recipe, does the smell factor in?
Course.
They put a plate in front of people, everybody says, ooh,
first
it looks
for
so
me,
beautiful.
I mean, for everything I see a sea scallop, I know it's fresh, I want to smell it. I want to see how briny it is, how sweet it is, how fresh it is. But, there's many things we have first a check of smell before we... do something always, and I think in cooking, I can smell some 15 feet away something who I feel is not sweating right, is not cooking right, is not feeling right.
And that, well, we all use our sense of smell to test the freshness of food. You have something that's been in the refrigerator a few days, you sniff it. If it's got a neutral smell or the right smell, you're perfectly happy. And if there's something wrong.
But even a cheese sometimes, I mean, we have some cheese were really rotten on the outside. And you have to have the knowledge to note that this is a noble rot rather than a bad rot.
Cut it off and eat what's inside because exactly. It's going to taste great. My guests are Danielle Ballou, who's the chef owner of Danielle Café Ballou and DB Bistro Modern, Ruth Reichel, editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine, and Dr. Marsha Levin-Pelshaw, associate member of the Manelli Chemical Senses Center in Philadelphia. And we are talking about the relationship between smell and our sense of taste here on the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC 93.9 AM 820, online at WNYC.org. Why do some people like hot peppers and things like that? Is smell associated with that? If I had put that nose thing on, would a pepper taste as hot as it would otherwise?
Yes, pepper would still be hot even with nose clips, although that is not a taste. It's more a part of the skin senses. So there are multiple sensory systems involved in perception of flavor. You have taste and smell, and you also have chemical irritation and heat and texture and all sorts of things going on.
We have a lot of stuff here and not much time to smell it all. I guess in the end we can talk about our responses to some of these things. We mentioned blue cheese, where some people just find it delectable and other people get upset. Truffles are another one. You brought in some black truffles. This is truffle season right now in France?
It's the end of the truffle season. Actually, it's the last week of the truffle season. So
now, when you open up the box...
As a little farewell smell.
You open up the box, and immediately this room Absolutely. Is filled with the smell of truffle.
And actually, I should give everybody a piece just to make sure.
Oh, that's about the nicest thing anybody said to me all day. But other people don't really get truffles at all. Is it, again, because of a different sense of smell, or is this just food tastes?
Well, we don't know for sure, but there are a lot of individual differences in the sense of smell.
I prefer truffle than jelly.
I'm going to try the truffle with my nose thing on.
That's a good idea. Won't be much there.
Well, it still tastes like truffle, but not as good.
Yeah, it's pretty bland with nose clips on. In any case, just as many people have otherwise normal vision, but they're colorblind, almost everyone has one or two odorants that they're insensitive to. And one that's been well studied is androstenone, which I have in this bottle. Here, about 50% of the adult population can detect it. The other 50% can't.
And what is this the smell of?
If you can't smell it, don't keep puffing it on your face or you might be attacked by a sow on the way home. That's a hint.
You should probably guess that.
I wish.
But not everyone can detect it. It's a legitimate individual difference. Androstenone is swine sex attractant. It's found in boar saliva. It's also the compound responsible for boar taint. And as I said, some people can detect this odorant. Others can't detect it at all. Some people can detect it, find it to be sort of sandalwoody, but those who are most sensitive find it to be sort of like the men's room at the trailway station.
Can you smell it?
I can smell it now, but when I started working at Monell, I was insensitive to it. It turns out that sensitivity to this odorant can be induced
through wonderful.
Exposure.
I see.
So
I'm not sure.
A lot of time at a train station.
There was an article in, according to a listener, in Women's World magazine about how smell tests are being used to detect Alzheimer's more accurately than brain scans do.
It is true that loss of the sense of smell occurs early in Alzheimer's disease and in a number of other types of dementia. However, it's a relatively nonspecific indicator, and so people who have lost their senses of smell shouldn't panic. That can happen after a bad cold or a head injury and doesn't necessarily mean that one is becoming demented.
But when we lose our sense of smell during a bad cold, we often find food less attractive. So can we use a loss of smell or some smells to actually help us lose weight?
The
stinky food diet?
Right. I've often, thought, gee, wouldn't that be great if people lost their senses of smell? They would lose weight. And some people do. They don't enjoy food anymore, so they don't eat. But a fairly sizable proportion gain weight. And when we ask them why, they say they never feel satisfied. So they keep nibbling and trying new foods.
And in fact, haven't there been experiments done with the opposite, with using very strong flavors? And one scientist actually found that by giving people particular strong flavors, they lost weight over a six-month period.
Yes, except for the fact that if the flavors are unpalatable, people won't use them.
We have to leave it there, unfortunately. I was hoping to end on a happy, palatable note. But
well, we can all sniff the truffle again.
Let's sniff truffles as I thank my guests. It's been really fascinating. Gee. And eating that truffle so early in the day, it's going to ruin the rest of the day for me.
I know. I wish I would have brought the eggs and made you scramble eggs with it.
Me too. No, it was good in itself. Dr. Marsha Levin-Pelshaw is associate member of the Manelli Chemical Senses Center, which is a scientific institute devoted to taste and smell research in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And Daniel Ballou is the chef owner of Danielle Cafe Ballou and DB Bistro Moderne. He has a new line of spices, and I'm sure we'll be sniffing those real soon. And Ruth Reichel is the editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine. She'll be back with us again next month. And I always enjoy these visits, Ruth.
Well, this one was particularly great, I think.
Thanks for checking out today's podcast of the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.